Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Great performances begin with a comfortable close shave from Gillette. Gillette, making men's lives just that little bit easier.
Game on 2FM.
Weekdays from 7.
Okay, we're going to move tack to rugby. We'll come back to the football before the end of the show, though. And I'm delighted to say we have Hugh Farrelly, who's a rugby writer and journalist with the Irish Daily Mail, on the line. Hugh, how are you?
How are you, Hugh? Great, thanks.
Good, good. So look, just before we get into your piece of the weekend, which I wanted to talk to you about, the news today that both Rory Cockett and Marc-Antoine Rallier have been cited by the EPCR for cast on behalf of what they did, basically, against Munster, one of which looked to be an alleged eye gouge, because you've got to say alleged these days, and certainly Rory Cockett, you could put a picture up on a few things, and Marc-Antoine Rallier for his tackle on Peter O'Mahony. It's a fair call that both of these guys have to answer these?
100%, yeah. It's just a bit frustrating from a Munster point of view that it's no good to them now, you know. Munster have a kind of a difficult history with referee Wayne Barnes going back over many years, who's, you know, courted enough controversy in his time. But, you know, Cast came out to do a mugging on at the weekend, and they were brutal throughout, and, you know, pretty shocking, to be honest. And, you know, Munster got caught on the back of it, you know, narrow loss, which could ultimately cost them home quarter final. So even though the two lads are cited and they deserve to go down, I mean, alleged eye gouging is like one of the lowest offences you can do in rugby, and regarded as such. So Cocker deserves to do time if he's found guilty, but it's not much use to Munster now. And you know, you just wish it had been controlled better at the time, you know.
Absolutely. And I remember watching kind of as the game was going on and was unfolding, it was clear that Wayne Barnes was slowly losing his grip on the disciplinary side of things, and certainly from the Cast point of view, their players were trying more and more stuff off the ball to try and upset Munster, and it was going unpunished. And I do think that Wayne Barnes probably needs to take some of the blame, Hugh, but equally I thought his assistants had a shocker as well, and the support or lack of support that they gave him.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's an overall official thing, and it's been kind of a theme of the season, you know, when you factor in the November internationals and stuff and the Owen Farrell high tackles and stuff like that. There's a lack of consistency there. It must be driving players and management mad. It's certainly driving supporters mad. And it's a combined effort. I mean, we seem to be able to watch TMO reviews ad nauseum for, like, you know, was it properly grounded and all this kind of stuff. And then there's something big like this happens and they miss it, you know? And I just think there needs to be, I don't know, I mean, it's so obvious. It seems to be an incident now every week. And as you say, like, it wasn't just Barnes, it was the TMO, all the technology is there. Like, you're sitting on, you know, if people who weren't in Cast are watching it, and they're seeing all this stuff so blatantly in front of their eyes, and there's nothing being done about it. And, you know, it's just an area of the game that really needs to pick up, I think.
What did you make of Joey Carberry's performance as well, before we move on, Hugh? And I don't want to be too harsh on him, because he's still very much learning his trade. And when you consider, you know, he played a lot of full back at Leinster. So in terms of air miles on the clock playing at fly half, he's very young in the game still. But I think there are still question marks over his ability to just control a game when things aren't going his way.
Yeah, there are. And as you say, it's like it's a work in progress. You know, he made the move down from Leinster to get game time. He's getting the game time. He's finding his way. But the thought that struck me watching it was, you know, back in the day, if Ronan O'Gara was playing, he'd have kicked his penalties, he'd have got the win, and you'd have forgotten about the game 2 days later. It would have been a routine win for Munster. And he's not there yet. He's nowhere near there yet. But like, there's no denying his ability. I mean, this is a guy that was picked out by Graham Henry when he was invited into Leinster sessions a few years ago. I mean, he's extraordinary ability, remarkable ability, like the step in, and he's all the tools. My concern, and I've been saying this for a while in the Mail, I think he's almost, I'd be a big Ross Byrne fan in Leinster. I think the guy has a real poise about him. He's a real kind of sense of control. He just looks like he fits, you know, and in terms of managing a game. And I wonder down the line, if, God forbid, something happens to Johnny Sexton, is Byrne the better starter and you keep Carberry as the kind of the impact guy off the bench, you know, because he would have that over Byrne. But it's just something I've been thinking of, because the kind of the boss in the game thing that we got so used to with O'Gara and we are used to with Sexton doesn't seem to come naturally to him, and the clock is ticking, you know.
And it's, again, you have to weigh up, I suppose, as well, what do you want from your fly half? And maybe this won't be a decision for Joe Schmidt, it might be a decision for Andy Farrell when he takes over. Do you want somebody who is exceptional at just managing the minutiae of the game from a position of fly half, or do you want someone with an X factor and the potential to break the gain line as Joey Carberry can do. And I suppose that's if Joey doesn't improve with the area we've just highlighted where he was poor on at the weekend, then you have to weigh up which of the two you value most.
Yeah, I mean, I mean there is still time. I mean, he was very impressive over in Exeter when they got the draw over there. That was a rough enough day, you know, conditions wise, tough outfit, you know. I mean, one of the higher rated teams in England, and he came through strongly there. So this was a really big test for him now. South of France, rugged, you know, dirty team, let's be honest. And it was just a bit disappointing that, you know, that he didn't dominate it more. But I mean, I'm not saying that you count him out of it yet. I mean, there's still time to come good. But there is a concern there for Munster now. Like, this was the season they're going to kick on, and now they're under pressure again, you know. So I think someone was saying during the week that, you know, if you're asked, like, where are Munster at now, no one's still really quite sure, you know. And that's the same situation when you apply to Carberry as well, I think.
Yeah, okay. So, look, the reason we wanted to talk to you as well was a very interesting piece that you had in the Mail on Sunday at the weekend, just exploring the possibility and setting out the parameters of what might need to happen, or if indeed it is possible, to have a fifth professional Irish rugby team. And it's been well documented, the success we've had over the last couple of seasons, the strength and depth we now have in our squad, and the amount of players ultimately that have to leave Ireland if they don't cut the grade at first choice Munster, Leinster, Ulster, or Connacht, and just go and try and find an alternative path. Do you think, and you've set it out the parameters well, and you've gone through a lot of the requirements, I suppose, if this was to happen. Do you think it's a reasonable possibility, Hugh?
I think it's something to be talked about. The way it came to me was I was watching the two Leinster games during November when the frontliners weren't available. They hammered the Ospreys and the RDS 52-7, and then the remarkable display against the Dragons in Rodney Parade, when they won 59-10. And you were looking at the team sheet, and it was full of guys like, you know, you'd have heard of, you know, from just keeping tabs on the scene, guys like Hugo Keenan, the two O'Briens, Jimmy and Connor, Kieran Frawley, Caelan Dorris, Scott Penny, these young fellas that you're aware of. And then you see them run out, and like, okay, neither Welsh side would have been, you know, overly daunting, but there was still plenty of experience in internationals there. Like the Dragons, that game, they were fully loaded. I mean, they as far as they could be, they had a clutch of internationals, including Lions like Richard Hibbard and Ross Moriarty, experienced guys. And these kids just blew them away, you know. And when you were looking at the likes of Scott Penny and these guys and the two O'Briens and Keane, like they looked like seasoned internationals. There was no great, you know, happy to be here kind of vibe off them. They just looked perfect for the role. And then the thought that you want to see more of them. And then the thought that they'd have to go back to the AIL, you know, essentially, until they might get another chance during the Six Nations just seems crazy. So you're wondering then, you know, there'll be another wave of talent coming through. The Leinster school system is remarkable at the moment. There'll be another wave of talent coming through next year, the year after. Guys like Josh van der Fleer, Dan Levy, these guys are still in their early to mid-20s. How long are they going to be around? Max Deegan. There's just a supply is outstripping demand at the moment. And it just made you think, if there was a fifth franchise, like England have 12 top tier teams plus a lower pro league, France have 14 and a D2, like they have plenty of options. We have four teams, and I think there is scope for a fifth team, and not just in Leinster are the obvious examples, but there's guys knocking around the other provinces. You know, Ian Keatley is now, you know, on the outside essentially since Carberry's come down and JJ Hanrahan and stuff. Guys like Bill Johnson, there's guys knocking around like Owen Griffin in Connacht, Dan Goggin in Munster, you know, even Darren Cave, Luke Marshall, these guys. There's loads of players there that you could find a home for and then create space for the next wave coming through. So I just think it's an interesting thing to address. You know, there's a lot of logistical issues with it. I ran the RFU and, you know, they were saying, look, it wouldn't even be on our radar at the moment. They're focusing on the existing structures as they are, and you know, things are going well at the moment, and but they say that a couple of bad Six Nations and the revenue dies off and all that, and that's fine. So if you were to do it, it would probably have to be independently funded, but I think there's definitely scope for a fifth team. I think if you had a fifth team, you'd find players to fill it, including like the Wild Geese who've gone abroad and stuff like that, and that would apply to coaches as well. I think Irish rugby is particularly good place at the moment, and there'd be definitely scope for it if it could be brought to bear. And the last thing I'd say on this is that, you know, people are saying it's a crazy idea and all this. But then you look at the Celtic League that has Italian, South African teams and was making eyes at the US, and it doesn't seem quite so outlandish, you know?
No, it doesn't. And also as well, you have to question as well, you know, the Celtic League in its current format, can it grow even more? I mean, you look at the attendance in South African games now. If you were to have another Irish province, and we come back to where you've suggested it be based, which is interesting, but Gary, you wanted to come in?
I think that the players are there, but it's, you know, as Hugh was saying, that it's very successful at the top end at the moment, but how you would brand it and market it, you know, where's, you know, that's the tricky thing, because you want it to be inspiring for a community. And we've seen in League of Ireland where that's been a big issue for a lot of clubs, even in big towns or cities. It's the buy-in from the locality, as much as there's obviously players there, but it's just to try to get that marketability about it.
And my big bugbear in this one, Hugh, is that if the IRFU had paid more attention to the Ulster Bank League, or the AIL as it is, and actually treated it properly and allowed it to coexist with the professional game, or at least that the standard wasn't such a drop-off, to as the provinces not consider them to be reasonable alternatives for players to go and play every week and have decent level of competition, then we mightn't even need to have this conversation. And Eva's texting to say, and the fifth rugby team shall be called Dublin, but actually you're making the argument that it's Cork where this team needs to go.
Well, yeah, like as Gary, there's a lot of different strands to this, right? On the AL thing, this is consuming the RFU at the moment. They're very conscious of the need for competitive games for Ireland's fringe players. The Celtic Cup isn't really cutting the mustard. It hasn't taken off. And the clubs are at loggerheads with the RFU. The RFU have a streamlined vision for the AIL, and the clubs are fighting their own corners, you know, because you have to suspend relegation. It's become a bit of a dogfight with no end in sight. So, like, there's no clear solution there. In terms of something to identify with, I remember a few years ago the RFU had an official line that Connacht were to be seen as a development province. So you kind of give it that tag. And the obvious location would be Dublin, because it'd be predominantly Leinster players, and you'd be looking at somewhere like Donnybrook or somewhere. Mm-hmm. But then it would be very much a kind of a Leinster A operation. And my suggestion was, and I've been accused of rebel bias and all that coming from a background in Cork rugby, but Cork at the moment is feeling pretty disenfranchised down in Munster. You know, the whole operation moved to Limerick, which was the, you know, practical, logical decision.
Yeah.
But Cork has a very proud rugby history, and it just feels cut off. And I know from grassroots level, you know, a lot of club lads wouldn't bother travelling up now to Thomond Park to watch matches the way they used to. Like, they got a handful of games in Musgrave Park every year, which are always well attended. And it, in terms of buying into a project, you know, you're talking about the traditional rebel mindset, a real capital, People's Republic, all that kind of stuff. But you could see them getting behind. You could certainly see the attendances coming out, regardless of the fact that the squad would be predominated by Leinster players. And that might be one way to look at it, you know. Mm.
Okay, well, look, it's great. As I say, like, there's a lot more to this, and I urge anyone to go on and read the article. It's online as well. We'll tweet the link out as well. Well worth having a read, and there's a lot more that we could talk about. We're just out of time. But Hugh, thanks a million. We'll talk to you again soon. Mind yourself. Thanks, man.
No problem at all. Thanks, Hugh.
Cheers.
Let's go. This is 2FM.